Hello, I'm Rosemary Martirana, Director of Intelligence here at the New Jersey Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness, NJOHSP, and you're listening to Intelligence Unclassified. This podcast is exactly what the title states: unclassified information about current trends in homeland security for the state of New Jersey, as well as educational information and resources for your awareness. Although it is produced every month, we aim to stay on top of current events and will often offer additional content. If this is your first time listening, then thanks for coming. Please feel free to add this podcast to your RSS feed or iTunes. You can also follow NJOHSP on Twitter at NJOHSP and Facebook. All links can be found in the show note and on our website, www.njohsp.gov. Hi, I'm Rosemary Martirana, Director of Intelligence here at NJOHSP, and today I'm speaking with Angie Gadd, one of our intelligence analysts within the NJOHSP Analysis Bureau. Today we're going to talk a little bit about what radicalization is and how it's related to New Jersey. So Angie, to kick us off, what exactly is radicalization? How do we define it?
So our office formulated its own definition. We define it as a process through which a person interprets world events by selectively emphasizing personal experience, cultural context, certain histories in order to perpetuate a narrative that justifies violence and support for a political cause.
So how exactly then are people radicalized?
So first, I'd like to emphasize in the definition a key point that radicalization is a process, so it doesn't occur overnight. That being said, there aren't many pathways into radicalization that exist. There is no single pathway or explanatory theory that exists that applies neatly across the board to all types of individuals or groups. And I think it's also important to steer clear of trying to identify a single model or theory for how individuals radicalize, and instead assume or work with the fact that there are multiple models and it differs depending on each case.
So then, what are some general themes you can talk to with respect to radicalization?
So from the recent case studies we've looked at, individuals generally tended to display certain behavioral and characteristic changes that were most noticeable to those who were closest to the individual. So be it a relative or a close friend. Like for instance, individuals became a little bit more isolated. They began to change their appearance. For those who were in school, their grades began to decline dramatically. Some openly and explicitly stated their support and or admiration for a specific terrorist group. In many cases, this group was the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, while others asked family members in very subtle ways their thoughts on the group and their justification for the acts that they've been carrying out. Others became secretive and cautious with their communication, so some went as far as changing their phones, their service providers, and even the telephone numbers. Now, it's important to note that these changes are not by any means a standard for all individuals, but just some indicators from many of the recent cases I've looked into.
So that being said, is there a specific example you've seen in New Jersey where individuals have radicalized here?
Yeah, so we've seen a case of three individuals here in New Jersey. So we have two brothers, Ale and Neder Sadeh, and their friend Samuel Topaz. So based on the criminal complaint, there were noticeable behavioral changes among the three, including explicit support for ISIS. So they were stating that the group is the only group fighting for human rights and democracy in the Middle East. The three became more secretive in their telephone communications and their communications amongst each other. One of the two brothers started to express anger whenever a conversation wasn't about Islam. And lastly, they were all making plans and preparations to travel to join ISIS overseas.
So in what way is an individual then most likely to be radicalized?
So without getting into the cognitive aspects of radicalization, in many of the cases we've looked into, there's always been a personal social connection that has sparked and sustained the radicalization process among individuals. So this personal connection can be a family member, a friend, a coworker, or an acquaintance. And we've noticed that friends and family members, like the case of Ale and Neder, tended to have the biggest influence and impact in the radicalization process. So now this isn't exclusive to individuals in the physical space, but includes friends or acquaintances made online.
So if family members and friends play such a big role in the radicalization process, what role exactly does the internet or social media play then?
So that's a good question. Studies revealed that the internet and social media alone aren't radicalizing factors or primary radicalization tools. They serve more as facilitators or platforms for terrorist groups such as ISIS to spread their messaging and propaganda. But radicalization in and of itself, in most cases, begins offline. Now, that's not to say that there aren't cases where individuals have solely and 100% radicalized online without a social connection, but those cases have been the exception and not the norm. Now, earlier when I mentioned friends and acquaintances having the most influence, influence that wasn't, again, exclusive to individuals in the physical space, but again, it could be friends or acquaintances that you make online. And then this is where ISIS has been distinguishable among other extremist groups in its ability to capitalize on social media, specifically Twitter. So what the group does is it has a cadre of people whose only job all day is to be on social media, and many of them seek out potential recruits by befriending them, promptly answering their questions about Islam, and justifying their brutal actions under their interpretation of Islam.
So have we instituted any counter-violent extremist programs in the United States? And if so, I mean, have any of them even been successful?
So there have been efforts, of course. I'm going to talk specifically about one successful local CVE effort that we've seen, most notably in Maryland's Montgomery County. So they adopted a community-led initiative that focuses on safety and preventing violent extremism. The way they've done this is the group is led by the Faith Community Working Group. So this includes government officials, faith leaders, youth activists, and violent prevention experts, among others. And they work in cooperation with local law enforcement and the Montgomery County Police Department. So this community has a great working relationship with local law enforcement, making this a promising model, I think, for other local communities across the United States.
Excellent. Well, that's good to hear. Well, thanks, Angie. And if you're interested in hearing more about OHSP-related products and analysis, feel free to visit our website at njohsp.gov. Thanks again.
Again, all links can be found in the show notes and on our website at www.njohsp.gov. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe to Intelligence Unclassified.